Coming to you from the Grey Moon Studios just outside Atlanta, Georgia, for a third season. This is Trice Talk, a conservative political and social issue podcast that's not just for conservatives. We don't try to tell you what to think. We just want to see if you're paying attention. For the next hour and a half, we hope to stimulate, motivate, aggravate, and enlighten you. Now, here's your host, a guy that's been paying attention since Ronald Reagan beat Jimmy Carter in 79, Grey Moon himself, Donald Wayne.
Hey, everybody. I'm your host, Donald Wayne, and it's a Friday night, January the 7th, 2023. Yep, we're already moving along into the first month of the year. Before you know it, it'll be Christmas again. Well, it'll take a while, but since this is the first time I've done an episode since right before Christmas, I just want to wish everybody a happy new year. Hope you had a safe and wonderful celebration last Saturday night.
This is Trice Talk, live Sunday through Thursday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah, I know that. Thank you very much. Appreciate the input. Okay, sorry about that. What was I saying? Oh, yeah, we usually stay in on New Year's Eve, at least in the last several years. But since we weren't able to go out and do our traditional Christmas Eve dinner, because just about all the restaurants that we would be interested in were closed on Christmas Eve, which I'm not complaining, because actually I used to feel bad for the people that had to work. But since they were open, we decided to go. And our favorite place was Ted's, pretty much. But everybody was closed this year, and that's a good thing. And so we didn't get to celebrate that time, so we went out on New Year's Eve early. We decided to go, you know, before the crowds hit the places that we were looking at. But we've actually, there was a couple of things we were looking at, but we found this neat, I don't know what you call them anymore. I think I would have called it a bar, you know, 20 years ago, but it's a brewery, beer garden kind of thing. It's off Marietta Square up in our neck of the woods, and it's called Glover Park Brewery. And it was really a neat place. They had, it's, you know, it, of course, if you're not familiar with the area, which you're probably not, there's Marietta Square is an old, I think most of the buildings were built in the late 1800s, if I'm not mistaken. And then there's one side. People decided to tear down one side of this square and put up new government buildings years and years ago. And it kind of ruins some of the ambiance of the square itself, but you know, it works. But there's a number of buildings off the square. Anyway, this particular brewery took over one of these old buildings, and the part that we went to was kind of in the basement, but it opened out into a nice brick laid patio in the back. And it was really nice. And of course, when we pulled up, there was a bunch of people out there outside, even though it was kind of chilly and maybe just a little mist in the air every once in a while. And there was already a fairly decent crowd because of the Georgia-Ohio State game. So a lot of people were onto one side of the bar watching the big screen TVs that had the game on it. And but anyway, it was a neat place and really, really had a good time. They didn't have any food, which was kind of, you know, disturbing in the beginning, because I can't really go anywhere and drink without eating something. I don't, you know, pretzels, you know, chips, nuts, something. I have to eat something as I'm drinking. So, but fortunately they had a catering truck outside the establishment out. It's kind of the parking lot, driveway kind of thing. and there was a bunch of people in line there. So, you know, I knew it was, must have been pretty good food. But, you know, I don't get exotic. They had, I think they had crab legs or crab balls or something like that. Lobster bits, things like that. But I don't do that in places that I'm not real familiar with. But we got these things called corn balls. And if you've never had that, if you're not from the South, you probably never even heard of it. But I've heard of them before. They're almost like corn fritters, but they're probably more akin to hush puppies if you go to seafood places that have hush puppies. So, but they were good. And in fact, they were so good. After the first order, we went back and got two more orders. They're not very big, you understand. So, but that was pretty much our New Year's Eve celebration. We left well before midnight, but it was fun. It was nice to get out. The best thing for me, the thing I really enjoyed, is the fact that it was a mixed crowd. You know, a lot of places you go to nowadays, especially that kind of atmosphere, it's just mainly people in their 20s and 30s. This was a pretty good mixed crowd. Of course, I was probably still the oldest person there, but it was very nice, very nice. So I hope everyone else had something nice to do on New Year's Eve, and it was safe. Anyway, just for another moment, while I'm on the subject of New Year's, did anyone make any New Year's resolutions this year? Or is that even a thing anymore? Now, I think I was watching the last bit of, you know, where they were dropping the ball or the apple in New York City. And I think the commentators, I don't know who it was, I really wasn't paying that much attention, but they were talking about New Year's resolutions. And I just wonder if people really do that anymore, because after years of making resolutions that maybe lasted 3 or 4 weeks, if I was lucky, I just kind of got out of the habit of doing that. I mean, if there's things in your life that you really need to do, why would you wait until New Year's Eve to do that or to commit to that? I'm just saying, you know. But you know, some of us gave up on making resolutions, New Year's resolutions, a long time ago, just because they're usually impossible to live up to, you know, especially the ones about losing weight or exercising more. And not that they're not good goals to have, but again, if those things are important to you in your life, I can't imagine that you're waiting around for New Year's Eve to do that, unless it's just the results of eating so much food over Thanksgiving and Christmas, the Christmas holidays. All right. I don't know if you hear that clicking or not. I have no idea what it is. I'm hoping that it's not coming through on that side, but I could hear it here. Anyway, that was kind of distracting. But since I was in the thought of New Year's resolutions, and I was wondering whether people that was still a big thing anymore, I decided to look on the internet and see if I could. I really was interested in see when in the world did people start making New Year's resolutions? When was that a thing? And I found one article that noted that New Year's resolutions have existed. I wouldn't have ever guessed this, have existed since the early 19th century and perhaps as far back as the late 17th century. That article noted that not only were people making resolutions some 200 years ago, but they were also breaking them and using them as excuses for bad behavior before, you know, the new year. You know, they'd say, well, you know, since I'll make a change in New Year's, so I'm going to go ahead and do this bad stuff right now. I'm going to just stuff myself insanely. And then starting New Year's, I'll just stop and I'll eat only healthy portions. Yeah. So, but after reading that, then I found another article that it was on history.com that proclaimed that the very first New Year's resolution dates happened over 4,000 years ago. Now, that's quite a big difference from the 17th century to 4,000 years ago. But, you know, that's history.com. So I kind of think that maybe they're onto something there. But they're stating that the first recorded people to celebrate a New Year's were the ancient Babylonians. So, you know, I don't know if you remember studying about them some point in your education, but their actual New Year's celebration was a 12-day festival called Akitu. I'm not sure which, but it began at the start of the spring planting season, which was in March. So certainly wouldn't be January for most places in the world. So basically it's saying that New Year's used to, at least back in that time, didn't even occur until March. Starting of the spring planting. One more little tidbit, and I know you can't wait for this, but since it looks like in the beginning New Year's was celebrated in March, I kind of wondered, well, when did civilization change the celebration to January? Anybody kind of have an answer to that in your mind real quickly before I give it to you? Well, according to infoplease.com, that's the only site I could see that even addressed that question, the first time the New Year's was celebrated on January the 1st was in ancient Rome in 153 BC. Well, that doesn't really surprise me, since the Romans were very skilled at organizing things, just not governing people very well. But it goes on to state that, in fact, the month of January did not even exist until around 700 BC, when at that time the second king of Rome, Numa Pontilius, I think I got that one right, Numa Pontilius, added the months of January and February to the calendar year. So, you know, that's something I never even realized was a thing, that I don't know. I assumed when they created the calendar that it was 12 months. They must have had 10 months that were longer. I'm not sure. But so the Romans did that. The king of Rome, around 700 BC, decided, hey, we need to add two more months to the calendar. And January being the first one, and February being the second one, and January will now be the beginning of the new year. And there you go. Things you probably wouldn't have heard anywhere else. I mean, I've celebrated New Year's Eve for the majority of my, at least adult life, and some of my childhood, and I never really even thought about it. I never wondered where the tradition started. It's just something people I knew and my family and so forth did, and so we just did it. But it just dawned on me this past weekend, when did New Year's Eve become a celebration? And then I found out, well, gee, they also created the month of January. All right, so that's the rest of the story for all of you Paul Harvey fans, if you happen to know who Paul Harvey is. I kind of laid out last episode, you know, some of the major issues that I wanted to be talking about first, that I would be addressing once I get started in earnest with the new season. And since this is one of the biggest stories in the news, right now. I thought I would, because it also ties into some other things that I'm really passionate about. So I thought I would talk about that just a little bit. Not that you haven't heard enough about it already, but I'm going to throw my spin here on this as well. And of course, that's the problems the Republicans are having in the House, getting Kevin McCarthy elected as Speaker of the House. Can't quite seem to collect enough votes. In fact, I think in some of the voting sessions, he's actually lost votes from the first time they took the tally. So I'm not sure. I think at the beginning of the day we were going to do round 11, and I'm honestly, I paid no attention to it today. I had a number of errands to take care of, and I have not watched it at all. I did catch maybe 15 minutes late this evening before dinner, and it looked like they still had not got, McCarthy had still not gotten enough votes, and but I didn't listen to what they were saying. So it looks like it's still in limbo right now. But when I originally started preparing the notes, they only had eight. They had taken eight votes, and none of them gave McCarthy the required 218 to win the gavel. You know, while a lot of people are critical of the Republicans that are holding out or opposing a vote for McCarthy, earlier yesterday, Newt Gingrich, having trouble with pronouncing words. I'm going to have to get something to wet the whistle here. Newt Gingrich posted this on Twitter. I don't know if you're Twitter friendly or not, and you may have seen it already, but Newt Gingrich, if you do not know who he is, he was Speaker of the House back in the, I think it was 86, which was the first time Republicans had won the House back, and I think in 30 or 40 years since they controlled the House, and Newt Gingrich was the Speaker. And this was this was during the Clinton years. So anyway, Newt Gingrich posted this on Twitter yesterday. Democrats are reveling in the Republican spectacle, but our nation needs a Congress working towards the country's priorities, not the current embarrassment. Also, the Washington Examiner reported that Gingrich also said, people shouldn't assume this is the end of the Republican Party in any way. This is a healthy, tough, serious conversation. So, I know he was kind of criticizing the Republicans in the beginning a little bit, but he was also saying, you know, all these people saying that the Republicans are falling apart. There's that noise again. I apologize if you hear it. But so the people that are criticizing Republicans, and I think they're kind of really hoping that the Republicans fall completely apart, so they'll be easier to beat in the next election cycle. And plus it always gives them something to talk about. Of course they talk about us all the time anyway, but I've never been a huge fan of Kevin McCarthy's. And when they were talking about him being the front runner for the Speaker several months ago, even before the midterm elections occurred, a lot of people were already crowning him as going to be the new Speaker. Of course, you know, Republicans, we all thought that there was going to be more victories in the House, and we would have, you know, somewhere around 225, 230, 240 new seats or seats won, and didn't quite pan out that way. But I just, even back when they were pushing Kevin McCarthy, I don't know. He seems like too much of a polished politician to me, and he was always talking about, he was always saying the talking points that everybody was saying, and really no substance to what he was telling us. Now, I do realize that Republicans got together with Kevin McCarthy and laid out a plan that the Republicans would use if they gained control of the House, which they pretty much felt like they would, but they just thought it would be a bigger control. And so they did have that out there, and they were telling people, you know, this is what we want to do. But I don't know. I just, you know, I don't have a whole lot of factual things that I could point to and say, well, you know, he's terrible. Although if you look on Twitter, there's a number of postings by people talking about the negatives of Kevin McCarthy. In fact, I had one. I don't think I've queued it up because I wasn't sure that I was going to use it. I may not. But it was one of the representatives that was gave a number of reasons why he wasn't going to support Kevin McCarthy. Let me see if I have it right here where I don't, if it won't take me 30 minutes to find it. Let's see, how long is that? This is, I can't tell who it is. I can't read it. Okay. Well, it's you know, he actually lays out a pretty good case why Kevin McCarthy is not his choice. Yeah, let me do a little bit of that. Let me do, hang on. Bear with me. I'm going back and forth here.
And he did that a couple of times today. Congressman Rosendale, welcome to Newsmax. How are you?
Great. Happy New Year, Greg.
Happy New Year. So why didn't you vote for Kevin McCarthy? I think you voted once for Jim Jordan and once for, was it Andy Biggs?
Andy Biggs, as we started off, and then I had two rounds with Jim Jordan. And I think we're making progress, quite frankly. You know, we gave Kevin McCarthy an opportunity over the last 2 years to demonstrate leadership skills. We sent him with the tools that he needed in order to get some common sense reforms when we went through the NDAA battle, when we went through the so-called infrastructure legislation battle, when we went through the continuing resolution and funding. Each one of those times, the Democrats did not have enough votes to pass that legislation. They required Republicans to help them. And so we presented Kevin with an opportunity to put some common sense reforms in each one of those pieces of legislation. And he failed. He took a knee, if you will, to use a sports metaphor. You know, it's like your quarterback taking a knee when you're down there at the 5-yard line, right there in the red zone. Yeah. And then there's another segment of failures that we see, and that is as we look at the operations on the floor, Greg, my goal has been to restore a functioning Congress. Everybody knows that Congress is broke. 15, 20 years, we talk about how broken Congress is, and yet we continue to use the same rules and have the same people basically implementing those rules and hope that we're going to have a difference. Right now, the system is set up so that all the power is consolidated into the speaker's hands and the 9 people that the speaker selects to serve on the Rules Committee. They control all of the legislation that goes out to the floor. They control the amendments that are even allowed to be placed on that legislation, and basically gives them super legislator status, and everyone else has to take a back seat and just vote up or down. And so it does not give me the ability to represent my constituents on the same level that these people that are in the Rules Committee that have a super legislator status.
Congressman, let me ask you this, though.
Sure.
There are only 20 or so of you, and I get it. Look, Kevin McCarthy is not Mr. MAGA. We know that. He's a career politician. Trump did endorse him back in June, as you know. But how much of this is you want to extract promises and commitments from Kevin McCarthy? You know, whether it's the vote of no confidence, whether it's these rules changes, are those negotiations happening right now? And do you think you can get him to concede, to give you what you want? And is there a scenario where you would vote for him if he does agree to what you and maybe Lauren Boebert and others are seeking?
So I'll start off with two things. Number one, I think that everyone is going to see the Trump endorsement is starting to cool off a bit. We heard word tonight that that is starting to evaporate as you and I speak here. The next thing I will tell you is that we tried to begin these negotiations with Kevin McCarthy last summer, Greg, last summer. We did not blindside him. We put these common sense amendments to the rules to restore. We're not asking for radical deviations, to restore the process of the House, the functions of the House that were in place before Nancy Pelosi and COVID and all this power was consolidated. But he didn't want to have discussions with us because, quite frankly, he thought he was going to have 250 or 260 members in the Republican conference after November 8th. And yeah, we see that plan failed miserably. And then after November the 8th, we started having conversations finally. But the fact of the matter is that he hasn't been forthright. And so if you don't trust the person that you're negotiating with, it makes it very, very difficult to enter into a good negotiation, a good faith negotiation. So
he goes on a little bit more there about the reasons why he's not going to. He says at the end that he will not support Kevin McCarthy. So anyway, I thought that was kind of interesting because it was, you know, what you hear in the media is that, you know, they always love to hang these extreme descriptions on anything that occurs on the conservative side of the aisle. But, you know, they talk about these rebels and these disruptors and as part of the Republican Party falling apart. And, you know, probably there is, well, I'll get to that in a minute. But when you lay it out and you start looking at some of the reasons why these guys are holding out and not supporting McCarthy until certain things are done, you kind of understand it a little bit better because, well, it's not cut and dry. It's not just a matter, oh, they don't like Kevin McCarthy. There's issues there. But unfortunately, most of the media doesn't like to report the issues. Now, again, this was on a Newsmax program. I think that guy's Brian. Oh, they don't show his name up. It's not popped up there. But the gentleman talking there was Matt Rosendale. Of course, he's a Republican, but it doesn't say what state he's from or what state he represents. So again, there's reasons. It's not just a matter of personality. It's not just a matter, you know, we don't want Kevin McCarthy. We want so-and-so. They're also making it sound like it's a personality thing, an ego thing that some of these 20 that are holding out or because they want the gavel themselves. And when you dive into this and you see various articles, if you look, you'll see a number of people that are reporting on these issues that these 20 holdouts, I think there's a total of 20, what they have with Kevin McCarthy. And yes, they're trying to get him to negotiate some of these. And apparently some of them have been conceded to by Kevin McCarthy, but for some reason, I don't know that there's enough there for them to go ahead and support him wholly at this point. But anyway, when I started looking at the reasons, it kind of changed my feeling. And again, I wasn't a Kevin McCarthy fan from the very beginning, but you know, the process needs to be over. And we need to get the speaker in there because all it is just it's delaying the inevitable and it's making us look bad. I mean, we already look bad because of the midterms because we bragged about it, how it's going to be a sweep and everything's going to be red and that didn't happen. And then some of our major candidates that we really need to win in the Senate didn't happen. And so now we get what little power that we were able to win during the election, and we can't move forward because we can't agree on the speaker. And again, this this representative said they started back in November after the election, trying to get these things worked out with Kevin McCarthy, and apparently they have not been satisfied up to this point. But here's some of the things. You may have heard some of them, you may have heard all of them, but I'm just going to throw these out real quick because these things make sense to me. So one of the major things they're looking at is they want Kevin McCarthy to agree on or promise that he would allow changes in the rules so that a small group of lawmakers can force a snap vote at any time to oust the speaker from his position. And supposedly he has agreed to that. Now, I think they originally had proposed a group of five it would take in order to oust the speaker, but for some reason, I think they went back after McCarthy gave him a little room and they decided, no, we want to be able to do it with just one to start the process. So that means one representative in the House can stand up and make a motion that they want a snap vote on whether or not the speaker should be removed from his position. I don't know, that might sound a little extreme, especially if it's they're shooting for only one person to be able to do that. And of course, you know, this is not just Republicans. Democrats could stand up too, and you can imagine they're probably going to go all for that. I imagine that's going to be fun if that actually ends up in the final negotiations. But the Democrats, when they were in control with Nancy Pelosi, they required a certain number of the leadership in the Democrat Party in the House to make that demand, get together and make a demand, which never happened with Nancy Pelosi. So she was pretty safe. Another thing that they are pushing for, this group that's holding out, is they want to be able to handpick at least a third of the members that serve on the Rules Committee, which is really one of the most powerful committees in the House. And this is the committee that controls what legislation reaches the floor and in what form it comes to the floor. They, along with the speaker. So, you know, that's part of the problem that we had in the last couple of years. Well, actually the last 4 years, because Nancy Pelosi and her minions took over, you know, after the second year of the Trump administration in that midterm election. So, you know, they were in control. All of her people were on the Rules Committee, and so it was almost impossible for Republicans to get anything out there that they wanted to do, even get a bill to the floor to be voted on to see if people would vote on it. So it's apparently a very powerful committee to be on in the House, and this group of 20 holdouts they're wanting to be able to pick at least a third of the representatives for that committee. Well, there's that noise again. you know, if you can't hear it, you're probably thinking, oh, what? He needs to take his medication. Now, there's a clicking noise somewhere, and I honestly, I'm looking around, and I can't see anything in the world that could cause it. So anyway, so another thing that which is really an important issue for me is this group of 20 want changes in the rules to allow opening spending bills to a freewheeling debate in which any lawmaker could propose changes, including those designed to scuttle or sink the measure. In other words, you know, lawmakers want to be able to debate any portion of any bill that comes before the body and express their concerns or propose changes to them or just propose that particular portion of the bill gets removed altogether. And that's not something that the Democrats have allowed to happen while they've been in charge. And apparently that used to be a rule in the House, but Democrats had a way of getting rid of that stuff because it's inconvenient for them. Let's see. Another thing they wanted votes on a handful of bills that are priorities for the holdouts. So there's a number of things that these 20 are proposing that they want to be. They already designed bills for these issues, and they want them to be high priority once the House gets going, so people can debate and vote on them. And they want to make sure that happens before McCarthy gets more support. And some of those things that they already have bills on that are priorities for them are things like term limits and a border security plan. And you know what? I've been talking term limits ever since we started Trash Talk 6 years ago. And I, for the life of me, I can understand why people, you know, in Congress wouldn't want term limits, because a lot of them would never have been there for 20, 30, and 40 years if term limits had been part of the Constitution. But we shouldn't have career politicians in Washington, D.C. Look what we have result of that. Of course, a lot of them have, we've had some, what was it? Oh gosh, I just forgot his name. He was in, I think he was 93 when he was still in, I think he was still a Senate, Strom Thurmond, I believe. And, he died, I believe, or he may have retired just before he died, but I think he was 93 and still serving. Also, some sources are saying that the holdouts are demanding rules changes that would no longer allow huge omnibus type bills to be voted on, that each bill would have to be voted on individually. Now, there's three items that I just laid out that I totally agree on. I mean, I can't imagine majority of Americans not thinking these are good ideas or good bills to be voted on. Term limits, let's get rid of these people that make a career out of being a politician and drawing all that money and usually coming out, especially if they've been in there 20, 30 years, they come out much richer than they were when they went in. Border security plan. And also this crazy practice they have of creating these huge, several thousand page bills and then expecting people to vote on them, you know, before they even know everything that's in it. They may know if there's something in there that they support, but they don't know what all the other garbage is in there. You mean, you remember Nancy Pelosi saying, back during the Obama years, when they were voting for Obamacare, well, we need to vote on this so we can find out what's in it. I mean, if a Republican had said that any point during the last several times that we've been in control of the House, they would have barbecued them. They would have just absolutely night and day said that's ridiculous and they're trying to pull something over on you. But because it's their idea and they're in control, that was okay. It just doesn't make sense. And actually, I would say one of my favorite sayings is, that's nuts. That's nuts. So proposing that each bill has to be a separate bill on its own, each proposal that they have. I mean, if it's something, you know, like for defense, they can include a number of different issues in that bill, but they can't tie a defense spending bill to a bridge, you know, across San Francisco Bay or something like that. those two won't happen. And that's a good thing. Each bill would have to be deliberated on individually and voted on individually, and you could vote something down without affecting something that might really be necessary. Also, lawmakers would be given at least 72 hours notice to review newly proposed bills before having to vote on them. Now, that's not a lot of time unless you do the last thing that I was just talking about and you design each bill to be voted on individually. Then that's probably 72 hours is probably a reasonable amount of time. But no more last-minute bills to keep the government from facing a shutdown. That's what this group of 20 is wanting. So in my opinion, these are good things. I mean, you know, it's not about ego. It's not about, we just don't like Kevin McCarthy. It's like, hey, there's things that we've complained about how the House operates the last several years, and we want to fix that. We don't want to give you power and then run the risk of you doing the same thing that the Democrats have been doing, even though, you know, the issues might be different. So why not get this out in the very beginning and make it clear to everybody in that body that these things are important and we want this considered before we'll give you our support? Because if they don't get those concessions now, the likelihood of getting them afterwards, once things get rolling, are very slim. I mean, so, you know, really what I take away from all of this, this perceived roadblock, you know, that that the media keeps talking about, is it's just some gutsy lawmakers making a stand against business as usual. And isn't that what, as conservatives, we've been, you know, complaining about for the last 6 years? Isn't that why we put Trump in office in 2016? Because we wanted a change in Washington, D.C. We were tired of them doing business as usual. And what happened? 2 years of Trump, Republicans didn't really support him the way they should have. Democrats took over, and then nothing's been done except spend money like they want to spend money. But I will say this, if they get everything they've asked for, then I think these holdouts need to get over whatever differences they have, whatever doubts they have about Kevin McCarthy, and go ahead and give him the gavel so they can get down to business, because it's not helping the perception of the Republican Party for this garbage to keep going on and on and on. But I think it's very important that all this is brought out so people know what's going on. There was an article by Katie Edmondson in the New York Times yesterday evening, I believe, that was using the typical liberal rhetoric to describe what is happening in the House, or not happening in the House, depending on how you look at it. But she said most of the liberal press and Democrat foam at the mouths and keep referring to this ongoing process as a humiliating example of what to expect from the Republican Party majority for the next 2 years. She goes on to say that some of the changes being demanded by the holdouts leave little doubt that the House would struggle to carry out even its most basic duties in the coming 2 years, such as funding the government, including the military, or avoiding catastrophic federal debt default. How many times do the Democrats, at the end of the year, use that same worn-out line that if we don't pass this humongous bill, that the government's going to fall apart, it'll default on its debt, the military won't get paid, Social Security won't get paid, and on and on and on and on. That's what they tell you. Well, if that's the case, then why aren't they voting at the end of the year on just these things that are important to the budget and not all this other garbage that I'm going to talk about in a few minutes. Then Edmondson goes on to rub salt in the wounds of this situation by stating that Democrats are united in their continuing vote for Hakeem Jeffries, giving him all of their 212 votes each round of voting. Well, no crap. Why would they not? They got nothing to lose. I mean, they really shouldn't have a chance of getting who they want in there anyway to become speaker unless the Republicans just muck it up completely. But so, you know, what have they got to lose? You think any Democrats are going to jump in and say, oh, no, I want Kevin McCarthy, even though some of them might really secretly want Kevin McCarthy. I mean, it's just for show. But they seem to think that's a big thing. Oh, yeah, well, we're all 212 of us behind Hakeem Jeffries. Well, good for you. All right. Let's hope. And I really thought maybe something would come of it today since McCarthy was giving in on a lot of those concessions. But obviously, I don't know if they said that we're going to make them work tomorrow or not to vote some more. Hopefully they do. Make them work tomorrow and Sunday until they get it done. They do not deserve a day off until they get it done. All right. So as I mentioned earlier, one of the issues the Republicans holdouts were trying to have changed is about massive bills being thrust on the House, lumping all sorts of pork in with items that, really might truly deserve to be passed. Honestly, you know, there is stuff in these budget bills every year that are legitimate and need to be funded and should be funded. But again, all the signs have been there. This isn't the first, you know, last month was not the first time that this has happened, that we get down to December. Oh, well, if we don't get this done at last minute, well, maybe if y'all hadn't sat on your asses in the House for the last 12 months and labored over this January 6th insurrection issues that you've been dealing with, as you call them, also, worrying about trying to get Trump impeached again. So, you know, there's no chance of him running against anybody, or especially Joe Biden in 2024. Maybe you could have ironed this out sooner, but probably not, because really, I don't even think that they intend to get these bills done. This spending bill that they have to do every year, they like the last minute, because that way they can stuff a bunch of stuff in there and then push people to go ahead and pass it because it's necessary or the government's going to shut down. So we've talked about it on Trice Talk for a number of times. I know we talked about it the year before last. It's been a thing for a long time. But it's basically what the leadership in the House does just about every year is tell American people, if the Republicans don't go along and pass these spending bills, before, what is it, December the 22nd or 23rd, the military is not going to be funded. We'll be defenseless in the world. All the social programs won't be funded, Social Security, Medicare, and so forth. And so a lot of people will be hurting if these don't get passed and signed in time. But we keep letting them do it. The American voting public keeps allowing them to use this tactic every year at the end of the year. I won't say every year. I know it's happened several times in the last 6 years, but can't tell you that it happened every year. But they do this, and they create this huge omnibus bill with a bunch of stuff in there tacked on that has nothing to do with the budget itself, other than we want to spend money on this. It has nothing to do with keeping the government open, paying the military, paying Social Security, paying Medicare, and the other social programs that they have. It's about getting these little things that they, I mean, they know we're going to find out about most of them, but once they've been passed, you know, they figure, well, you know, we seem to get over it. The American voter seems to get over things that they don't like, and they forget about them by the time the next election rolls around. Because if we didn't forget about them, we would have done something about it a long time ago. I don't know why we're not enraged. I'm enraged every year. I was enraged in December, and I was trying really not to be, because I knew when this started becoming a thing and we knew that they were pushing this, it's like, here we go again. Why can't we stop this? Why can't we? I can't even believe all Democrat voters support something like this. So this stand is being taken by a few Republicans that have the guts to stand out there and say, we don't want to do business as usual anymore. We don't want any more of these bills coming to the floor. We want to have to vote on every item there is that you put before us and vote on it individually so it can stand or fail on its own merits. So to support the point that I'm trying to drive home here, because I know I'm probably beating this horse to death, but and please, none of you animal lovers message me about that, because I love horses. But I want to share with you some of the pork that was crammed into this omnibus bill last month that every, you know, the Democrats insisted had to be passed, and or otherwise the government would shut down. So I found, it's hard to find specific things. A lot of people mention the major ones, like the $40 million? Was it 40 million or 40 billion? I had to look that up. I haven't seen it in about a week, that number. But that was one of the first things that came out. We're giving 40 million or 40 billion, probably billion, because million doesn't go that far now, to Ukraine to help them. So that was in this omnibus bill that had to be passed or the government was shut down. But anyway, I found this editorial on the Las Vegas Review Journal website. Never heard of them before, but it was one of the few that I found that would actually list some things for me. It was dated December the 22nd, 2022. So it might have been right before they voted on the bill. Or maybe it was the day they voted on the bill. Anyway, it says, the article says, on Tuesday, the Senate and House Appropriations Committee released a 4,000-page, $1.7 trillion omnibus spending bill to fund the federal government operations through next September. So see, it looks like these things really should have been voted on well before September, but that was before the election, folks. So they were kind of pushing, kicking the can down the road, because they didn't want to take a chance that they put this stuff in there that might affect them during the election. So as so often happens in Washington, lawmakers aim to rush the bill through both chambers of Congress ridiculously within days, so that it would be ready for the president's desk by that Friday. Few of the politicians who vote in favor of the measure will actually know what's in it, except maybe those people who were getting earmarked items or earmarked money for their districts. But here are just a few of the ridiculous items that you, the taxpayer, will be paying for because of this bill. And then they cite a couple of sources. One of the sources was Elizabeth Nolan Brown of Reason. I don't know what that is, but she notes several items. The bill earmarks $750,000 which not a lot based on the 1.7 trillion. But anyway, for fire alarm modernization at the Metropolitan Opera. So what is this money for fire alarm modernization at the Metropolitan Opera have anything to do with the funding of the federal government for the coming year? What? But it's in the bill. Okay. $3 million, she notes, for an LGBTQ museum in New York. Didn't say whether it's New York City or just the state of New York, but $3 million for that. More than $3.6 million for a Michelle Obama trail, and authorizes the creation of a Ukrainian Independence Park. I'm not sure if those two things are part of that $3.6 million or if that's just for the Michelle Obama trail, but she lists these two things together under that one heading. The bill also directs $200 million to the Gender Equity and Equality Action Fund, whatever the hell that is. $200 million. Also, $7.5 million for the study of the domestic radicalization phenomenon. So they're going to pay some group, some, I don't know, group. Let's just say group, because I don't know who the money's going to. $7.5 million to study domestic radicalization phenomenon. Really? All right. That was all from Elizabeth Nolan Brown. Now they also cite a source, Representative Mike Johnson, who is a Republican representative from the state of Louisiana. And he tweeted these items. Also in the bill is electoral college changes, but it doesn't describe what those changes are. That was one of the things that the Democrats were wanting to do. They talked about doing for the last 2 years. They, a lot of them, especially in leadership, want to do away with electoral college and just base it on the popular vote in this country, which, if that were to ever happen, folks, if you don't really understand what the Electoral College does, I know I didn't for years. I had no idea. You know, I thought the popular vote was what elected the president of the United States. But, and then when I found out, well, there's Electoral College, I thought, well, this seems kind of hokey, until I had it explained to me. I read an article about it, and now it certainly makes sense. It certainly makes sense. So I'm not going to talk about that in length tonight, but I'll probably do a portion of an episode on that in the near future, because if that's in the bill, it doesn't explain what it is, what changes they're proposing, but we could end up with some problems there, and especially in the next presidential election. It also in the bill is this omnibus spending bill is IRS retirement reforms. We don't really know, is that juicing up the retirement pensions for people who worked at the IRS for a number, they probably only have to work 5 or 6 years to get retirement, but there's also money in there for cosmetic regulation in the country. Also, healthcare policies were also noted in this omnibus bill. And he goes on to say, even horse racing rules are all jammed in under the guise of a government funding bill. And see, that's part of the problem. They call it a government funding bill, and then they have all this crap in there that has nothing to do with government funding. It has to do with funding pet projects for individual representatives in the House and the Senate. That's what it's about, folks. Those certain people getting millions or hundreds of thousands of dollars for their districts to keep their voters happy so they can get their ass reelected, you know, next election cycle. That's not government funding. Let's see. But, you know, I mean, Democrats, they're changing our entire language anyway. They're changing the definitions of a lot of words that we have used in our language for hundreds of years, over 100 years, I should say, not hundreds of years. Maybe some of them should be changed, but certain ones, you know, like this, government funding shouldn't have anything to do with horse racing. So, but that's how they are. I guess they're trying to get us, you know, used to these new definitions of things that that they feel like are a better description of the stuff that they want to be prevalent in our society. So, you know, they keep adjusting and tweaking the definitions of certain words so it fits, you know, their agenda more or less. Let's see. We also have reference in the article that Representative Dan Bishop, who is a Republican from North Carolina, reveals that the word salmon appears in this omnibus bill 48 times, with $65 million earmarked for Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery. $65 million. You could probably pay a bunch of fishermen a lot less than that, or people to go out there and if they're doing salmon recovery, maybe you could get people to do that a lot cheaper than $65 million. There's also, as well as an additional $5 million for the studying the impacts of culverts, roads, and bridges on salmon populations. So they're going to pay some other think tank or a group, some group somewhere, you know, $5 million to go out and study the impacts of these culverts and roads and bridges on salmon population. Okay. Well, you know, there's probably an easy answer to that because humans have an impact on nature. And as the population grows and areas of the country become more populated, people move out to areas. You know, I can give you an example of that issue here, where I live in this county, a little bit north of Atlanta. We're having issues with deer. In fact, I live in a subdivision that's probably, you know, there's not much woods left within, you know, 4 or 5 miles of me, but there are patches of wooded areas here and there. But a lot of new subdivisions have gone up in the 30 years that I've been here. And in recent years, probably the last 4 or 5 years, it's not unusual to see a deer in our yard and our neighbor's yard at night, foraging for, you know, whatever they can find in the yards to eat. In fact, I planted some bushes several years ago, and they 2 or 3 weeks after I planted them, it seemed like they weren't doing that much. I'm thinking, you know, gee, the leaves are falling off. And then I caught deer out there chewing on them one night. So, you know, there was a time as more subdivisions get built in these areas around us, you know, the deer have fewer and fewer places, less and less habitat for themselves. And they end up, you know, coming into subdivisions, which, you know, it kind of looks cute if you look at it one way, but then on another level, it's kind of dangerous because as they migrate into these areas, then they run more and more risk of being hit by automobiles. And occasionally I will see one on the highway. So human beings have an impact on nature. The only solution to that is don't let people go in the areas where you have the deer and the salmon and da-da-da-da-da. I mean, it's a real simple solution, except for the fact, you know, where else are people going to go? But they're going to pay somebody $5 million to study that. There's also $665.7 million set aside for international fisheries commissions. So we're going to pay probably a bunch of foreign experts, I guess you might say, to study fisheries across the globe. I'm not sure really what purpose of that is, but you know, we're going to give them $665 million, almost $666 million to do that. Also, Representative Bishop highlights the bill's provisions of $3 million for bee friendly highways. Now, what the hell is a bee friendly highway? I don't think I've ever seen a bee on my windshield as I've been driving. Could be wrong, but they're going to spend $3 million to study whether or not bee-friendly highways are possible. I don't know. I'm not going to go in there right now. Let me move on to the next one, which is I may have made a mistake on transferring that number, but it looks like, let's say, $1.5 billion to be part of a global multilateral organization. $1.4 billion to be part of global multilateral organizations, whatever the hell that is. So more money we're going to give to foreigners when we have lots of issues in our own country that we have not been able to resolve. Here's a good one. I love this one. I about flipped when I saw this one. $410 million towards border security for Jordan, Lebanon, Egypt, Tunisia, and Oman. $410 million towards their border security. I really don't know what that entails, but this bill doesn't set aside anything for U.S. border security. Now, it does set aside some money for management, in the sense of they want more people down on the border. They want more judges, you know, so they can process people more quickly and so forth, but nothing to actually address border security itself, to stop the people from coming across the river. So Representative Johnson has a radical idea. And this kind of ties into what I was saying earlier. Funding for each government agency and changes to each of these unrelated policies should require their own full open debate in committee and on the floor, with the opportunity to make amendments. He also surmises that most, if not all, of the unrelated policies in the bill would fail if they were presented on their own, which is why the bill is being forced on lawmakers at the 11th hour before anyone has time to read it, let alone debate it or amend it. Yet it will remain commonplace, he says, inside the Beltway as long as voters look the other way. We have been looking the other way. Now, not all of us. I've been pissed off about it for years. But obviously not enough voters in this country have paid attention to this travesty of that our representatives, you know, thrust upon us every year, passing ridiculous bills to spend money on things that no way in the world that anybody would have the nerve to bring up some of these bills alone and have people vote on it or debate it. They probably wouldn't even bring them up for debate because they know it wouldn't go anywhere. And they know the press would probably pick it up and say, what are the, you know, $3 million to study, you know, bee-friendly highways? I mean, who in the hell got going to get that money? But Representative Johnson and the others that the 20 holdouts, they're right. We have allowed this practice too long in our Congress, and we just gripe about it when some of the items become public. And if you'll think back, every year we get told some ridiculous things that get funded by the federal government, or they spend the money. I don't know they're actually funded. I don't think they really even have the money, but they spend it anyway. It doesn't stop them from spending it. But every time the election time comes around, we forget about it. We forget about all the stupid, corrupt things our representatives pass into law. And we go out and we vote for the same people over and over and over again. Not all of them, but too many of them. I mean, it's no wonder that our country's future is in peril. As voters, we have allowed the corrupt and crazies to take control, especially in the last 4 years. Well, actually six, because, you know, again, the first 2 years of the Trump administration, even Republicans were fighting, resisting the things that Donald Trump was trying to do that he promised the Americans that he would do and we wanted him to do, but we couldn't even get people in our own party to support him to get these things done. I can't believe that most of us would ever support some of these ridiculous things if we actually paid attention to the fact that, oh, wait a minute, now we're working. They take money from us to pay for these things. They take money from us to build a bridge in Arizona. Was it around outside Phoenix, Arizona? Now, that wasn't in this omnibus bill. It was just money that the federal government committed or allocated to build this bridge. They call it the Bridge to Nowhere, the Republicans do, for bird watchers so they can increase the bird the exposure as bird watcher capital of the Southwest or something like that. Several million dollars on this bridge. But it's a pork project for the state of Arizona or the city of Phoenix, if I'm correct, and that's where it's at. Now, I didn't know this, but I read also that there was a decade-long ban on earmarks in the Congress, but Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats brought it back in 2022. So I thought they'd been doing this for years, but evidently they had cut it out for a while, but the Democrats decided, oh no, we need that because we got stuff we want to spend money on. But honestly, lawmakers on both sides of the political aisle have defended this practice. Republicans defend it too. Some Republicans defend it because it's a way for them to get money for their local districts for projects that would otherwise go unfunded. Well, I have a hard time, and I could be wrong. I may be a little extreme on this, but I have a hard time understanding why people in Georgia have to pay for projects in Washington State or Montana or Arizona or especially California, which are things that really will have no impact on people in Georgia at all. Even remotely, if there was a chance that I was ever going to visit Washington State at some time, it's very doubtful that a lot of these projects would have any positive impact on anybody else's life other than the people in the particular district where this money is spent. That should be a local issue. That should be a state issue. That should be local taxes, county taxes, state taxes, for these garbage projects that are basically only for that state, people in that state. Why do all the taxpayers across the country have to pay for stuff that are really just for individual states, unless it has something to do with interstate transportation or improving the flow of goods and services across the country and so forth like that? There's certain things that, yes, we do need to share the cost of, like the military. But some of these pet projects, like the LGBTQ Museum in New York, chances are I'll probably never go to New York City again. I've been there one time. I went there during the Hurricane Sandy disaster in 2012 to do some volunteer work. Probably the only one and only time in my life I'll ever be in New York City. And it was a disaster then. But why do people in Georgia have to pay for that? Why is it American taxpayer money has to go for things that basically are designed to benefit the people in a particular state and create revenue for them? I don't understand that. I understand it in the sense that, well, some of the political leaders say, well, if we didn't get this money like this from the federal government, then these projects would probably never get done. They would go unfunded. Okay. So if it's not important enough in your state to get this done, then it shouldn't be done. If New York can't fund that museum, they can't find a way to fund it, and they should be able to because there's a lot of wealthy people living in New York State, then it shouldn't be done. It shouldn't be done. I know when they wanted to build a new stadium for the Atlanta Braves here in our county, they found ways to fund it. I don't believe they got any funny. It's not really funny money. Well, it is because it's probably worthless in a lot of cases, but I don't know that they got federal money for that. But if they did, I mean, they sold bonds. They raised the money, you know, because I don't think people in Washington State or New York State or California should have to help fund a construction of a stadium that is primarily for the benefit of the people in this county and in this state, in this city. It doesn't make sense to me. And that's the same thing we're talking about with a lot of these other pet projects. But again, Republicans are guilty as well. To wrap that up, as Representative Johnson said, so many things that are tucked away in these massive bills are things that would never survive scrutiny if exposed before being voted on. The fact alone tells you that these types of earmarked projects should not be allowed to be hidden within items that are necessary to keep our government running and functioning properly. I mean, really, it's apparent that so many things that are American, that American taxpayers are stuck paying for, have nothing. They're nothing more than payoffs to certain legislators for supporting party issues. I mean, I'm still trying to figure out why I have to contribute taxes to state pet projects. It doesn't make sense to me. I mean, we have a set of common things that people in all states need to share, like the military. And like I said a minute ago, roadways, interstate highways and stuff like that, even bridges and on interstate highways, but stuff that's just local, that should be the problem of the state and the cities where they're at. And if they would spend their money properly, look at all the money that California has wasted on that bullet train that was supposed to go from, I think it was LA to San Francisco. And they've only gotten us, a small number of miles completed and they already spent all the money that they had allocated for that project. That's the other problem to giving states money like this and districts money like this is because we know that money that the federal government gives people never gets spent properly, never gets spent properly. My favorite thing is the money that under Barack Obama's administration that was given to Solyndra out in I think it was California, or maybe it was Washington State, to produce solar panels. And then the company goes bankrupt and the officers of the company end up making a little bit of change. And people act like, well, it's nothing, you know, it just happens. No, it doesn't happen. No, it doesn't happen. Or it's not supposed to happen. Personally, I've had enough of this reckless spending. I've had enough. I've had enough years ago. I've had enough today. I had enough in December when they spent this money or they allocated this money. They approved spending this money, I should say. And I would like to think that I am not alone in this. And I know I'm not because of the articles that I read, but we need a majority of Americans to stop allowing this behavior from our elected officials on both sides of the aisle, Democrats and Republicans. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of Trice Talk. I appreciate you spending the time listening to this podcast. If you hung in there with me, I know a lot of the stuff that I talk about is stuff that has been probably beat to death. If you pay attention, if you watch the news on Fox, even if you watch the news on CNN. But I think they're important issues. And the thing is, they've been on network news for years and nothing is being done about it. So I think out in the podcast community where we have an opportunity to talk a little bit more in depth about some of these things, that I'm hoping that, you know, that some of you will feel the same way that I do and that you start taking steps to make that known to your representatives. Write them emails, write them letters, place calls. If you got their Twitter handle or whatever it is that you call it, tweet them, inundate them with messages that you're fed up. But hopefully I fared a few things. Hopefully, yeah, I'm getting tongue tied. Hopefully I've shared a few things with you tonight that, well, if nothing else, will be food for thought that you'll think about it a little bit and say, well, maybe, you know, maybe that's not such a bad point after all. Besides, it's the sharing of ideas and information that really help us to address issues, you know, to get so we can make informed decisions in our lives. But I'll encourage you to go out and do your own research, look on the web. Look up some of the things that I've been talking about and see if you can find more information on it. And if you can verify the things that I've told you tonight, I'm hoping that you'll be fired up about some of these enough to take some action and not just be pissed off every time they happen. All right. If you like tonight's episode, please hit the like or follow button on your screen, if you will. I would certainly appreciate it. Also, if you like Trice Talk, I would appreciate your subscribing to this podcast. I haven't ever pushed that in the past, but, you know, if you're of a mind to do that, I would certainly appreciate that as well. Please check out Trice Talk on Facebook and or follow me on Twitter, which is Trice Talk with G Moon on Twitter, Trice Talk WG Moon on Twitter. I generally post comments usually on my pet project, pet projects, pet issues daily. A lot of times I'll just retweet and make comments on certain things, but sometimes I'll create my own. If you have friends or family that enjoy listening to podcasts, please tell them about Trice Talk, even if they're not conservative. You know, unless they just hate Republicans and, you know, they wouldn't spend a moment listening to a conservative voice. But maybe even some of those. Maybe we can find some common ground as we go on throughout this season of Trice Talk. Also, if you would like to comment on any of the subjects that I present on this podcast, please feel free to send me an email to tricetalk69pts@gmail.com. That's tricetalk69pts@gmail.com. The next episode of Trice Talk will, I'm planning on doing it on Monday night, this coming Monday night, January the 9th. I believe it's the 9th. Oop, maybe it's the 10th. No, it'd be the 9th. All right. I don't have a calendar in front of me. I'm looking at a couple of things to verify the date. But I'm going to be discussing one of my all-time favorite subjects on Monday, and that's going to be immigration and our open southern borders. For the life of me, I don't know how in the midterm elections, immigration, the southern border, and the mass of people that has come across in the last 2 years was not a problem for voters or more voters, even Democrats. But anyway, I'm going to be talking about that on Monday. And hopefully I'll be presenting some points and facts that maybe you haven't quite heard from the people that you listen to. I'm also hoping to make Monday night show and a live show if I can manage that. And so that will allow you to be able to call in, or you can leave some comments in the chat room if you would like. Since I'll be doing the show solo again, probably last season, I had a little difficulty trying to maneuver around and do the show and pay attention to my notes and so forth, and also respond to people in the chat room. I tried to tell everyone then that I'm not ignoring you. It's just that, it's hard for me to juggle. I don't juggle that as well as some of you younger people do, multitask, but I'll do my best if I do the live show to try to keep up with comments in the chat room. But you can look for further details on that podcast and any future ones. I try to schedule a few ahead of time. You can look at that on the Podbeam calendar. I want to leave you tonight with a quote from Plato that really applies to what I've been saying here tonight, and or actually it really applies to where we are in the country right now. It's more than just what the issues I've been talking about tonight, but it ties in pretty well, I think, and it's short. And Plato said, "If you do not take an interest in the affairs of your government, then you are doomed to live under the rule of fools." I think 2 years ago proved that, or actually 6 years ago proved that. All right. Till next time. Donald Wayne. Please pay attention and get involved, because we are the solution, people. Stay safe, everybody.